fighting tyranny. You're listening to Knights of the Storm.
Good morning, fellow knights, and welcome to the Knights of the Storm. We're back in the saddle. Today is Saturday, September the 23rd, 2023. I, of course, am your host, Jason Barker, and with me in the co-pilot seat, your other host, Angus Mustang. What's going on, Angus?
Not too much. It's a little bit chilly this morning down here in the my pretend studio. I had to come down here and close the windows this morning, but it's nice. It's nice. I'd rather have this than sweating.
Oh yeah, it's been a little chilly here too in the mornings. I actually got to put socks and shoes on to go outside, you know. But anyway, things are going good here. I got a couple quick announcements before we get started. I'm going to start doing that in a little announcement segment at the beginning. First things first is Angry Tiger is back. Those of you in our community know that he had a little medical situation go on, probably stress related. But anyway, he is back. He did a wonderful financial review last night. And it was off the chain. So if you haven't seen it, I know he normally does that on a Wednesday. But he was saying something about maybe moving it to a Friday. So, check in, go see that. It'll blow your mind. The breakdown of how many millions of dollars per hour this country spends on nonsense and what we could be doing with that money. Anyway, we wanted to thank you for your prayers for Tiger and also for Rhonda. Continue to pray for Rhonda. Y'all know who she is. She's got a grandson that needs some attention. So keep them in your prayers. And then also I wanted to talk about your show, Event Horizon. Angus, tell us about that and when the next one's going to be.
Well, the next one hopefully will be next Saturday. Of course, it's recorded and then I put it out on Sunday. Maybe be heading towards streaming live at some point, you know, within the next month or so. Maybe our Veterans Day special will be when it goes live.
Nice. Have you met the subscriber requirement to go live? I know there's a minimum, which isn't too bad.
Yeah, I believe I have.
Okay. So. Well, go subscribe anyway, folks. If you haven't, it's Event Horizon on Rumble, and just subscribe to it. That way we're sure to have enough people in case he wants to go live. And that's cool that you do it on a Saturday and then put it out on a Sunday, because Sunday is kind of a slow news day for people that want to watch podcasts. And it's a little different, too. It's kind of covers like not serious political stuff. So it's kind of a good way to wind down. And then I guess the last one. You just went to freeworld.nyc. How was that? Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, that was very good. It was nice to meet Billy Ray Valentine in person and Tony Arterburn, Charlie Robinson, Wayne McCroy, Richard Gage, and Don Jeffries. Met them all, talked to them. Got Don to sign my book for me. So
nice.
Now, anybody who wants to purchase that is now $175 for a, I think the book cost me $20. So. The profits are there. I told Don I'd split it with him, but no, so it was a good time and it was a lot of good presentations that they did.
Yeah, Tony's stacked, isn't he? He's a beast.
Yeah,
in person. Yeah.
Yep. You can definitely recognize him right away.
Oh yeah. All right. So I guess we'll jump into it. Let's go ahead. Oh, today's topics. We're going to be talking about hydrogen power. Angus brought that one up. And then, since we were talking tech, I'm going to talk about electronical vertical takeoff and landing machines. And I think this kind of plays into the future on where we can see things going. I think they're kind of cool. I see some good things about that. But then I see some, just kind of see a trend that kind of shows where they're going. I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with the devices themselves. And if we could tie in what Angus is going to talk about with hydrogen to power these things, then it kind of makes sense to go in an actual green, kind of a green direction that isn't a BS green direction. So that's what we'll be talking about today. And I guess we'll just jump into the verse of the week and get started.
Okay.
And here goes StreamYard doing its weird stuff again. All right. So this comes from Genesis 11, 5 and 6. Fits in with the tech stuff. And the Lord came down to see the city, talking about the Tower of Babel, right? And the tower, which the children of men built. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they began to do, which is to build the tower to go to the heavens, right? And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. And that's kind of where we're at today. there's nothing that we can't imagine, and we can somehow make it happen. And if you look into Daniel, and Daniel talks about in the end times that the technology and the knowledge, doesn't talk about wisdom, talks about the knowledge, technology was going to be ever increasing. And even in Revelations, they talk about that the people gave power to the beast to speak, right? And then if you didn't worship the beast, the beast would cause them to be killed. To me, that reeks of AI, okay? The AI making these decisions. How hard would it be for AI if you're in a self-driving car that's connected to the Internet of Things and you're connected to the Internet of Bodies? It knows you're in that car, to just go ahead and crash that car into a wall. It could definitely, AI can cause you to be killed in many, many ways. A hospital, you're hooked up to a ventilator or some machine that's connected to the internet. There's all kind of ways I can see that happening. What's your take on it, Angus?
Well, now you got me scared about the AI coming after me, but I feel like an F-35 pilot.
Yeah, but right.
No, I just, you know, the funny thing is you talk about, you know, everything is that we imagine is possible. But, you know, when you look into this stuff like hydrogen and everything, it's all possible, but man, they put high price tags on everything. And that always seems to be the first thing that they go for, is telling you how much money, you know, it's going to cost, how much they're going to make on it. You know, if they can make hydrogen fuel cells and not make a profit on it, but, you know, save the world from the global climate change, as they like to say, they wouldn't do it for free. You know, it's
right.
They talk about saving humanity, but that, you know, this is going to come at a price tag for you people. So,
well, all the other green energy that they're chasing right now is a money pit.
Oh, God.
The only way they stay alive is by getting subsidized. So this goes back to the AC versus DC power argument. You know, it's just whichever one gets backed, and they have their winners and losers. And that's going to be part of my subject too. What I see forthcoming with this competition that goes on. They allow this competition to happen, and then whoever's going to play ball is the winner, right? And the green energy side played ball, with what they're doing now. So anyway, I guess we'll go ahead and get into it. Let me see here. I got something for you. Yeah, nice. What you got going on with your energy?
Well, so I'm a little bit more interested in the hydrogen side. As the company I used to work for, we built some of the first hydrogen fuel cells, which when we did that, this was the late 90s, early 2000s. And I, you know, when we were told what we were going to be building, I was like, wow, that's, you know, interesting. At this point, I was, you know, didn't really understand the green energy. I was new to it. I'll put it that way. And I just said, you know, fuel cell, that sounds cool. And then, you know, I thought it was a self-contained, you know, you're going to put this thing out there, it's going to create power, but it requires natural gas, you know, so it's not really, you can't say it's 100% green because you're still having to use natural gas to do this, but it's fine. It's still viable, definitely more viable than lithium ion batteries, wind turbines and solar power, as far as I'm concerned. So looked up a little bit of that.
Tell us what, like, let's define what how do they get power from hydrogen? I know what a hydrogen fuel cell is. I've been looking into this since the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. I looked into the whole free energy thing and all that nonsense. But the hydrogen fuel cell really piqued my interest because it's actually doable and it is sustainable, and you can do it in a green way. If you really don't want to have carbon dioxide, there's a way to do that. Yeah, using wind and solar to get the hydrogen, to me, that they haven't proven that that's actually a net gain when it comes to carbon that they want to get out. I don't care about the carbon dioxide. I don't think it does nothing. Historical ice core samples show that it follows heat rises, not the other way around. So is the rise of carbon dioxide a result of heat? You know, the globe warming through natural cycles, that's what science indicates, not the other way around, is what I'm getting at. So explain to us, what is hydrogen? How do they use it for power, I guess?
Well, you're going to be actually have a little clip here. So, well, not a clip, but a, if you add my screen, please.
Oh, yes, sir. Hold on, I lost my mouse. There it is.
I'm looking for my description of it. So it's putting electricity through water, and I had that. See that? I didn't come prepared 100% today. But it's theoretically, it's a clean energy. So you said you're putting electricity into water to promote hydrogen, and I cannot find that now.
So so you're talking about that stuff you saw in like junior high or high school where they put the positive in one side of, and the negative in the other side, and then the bubbles come off. So what it's doing is it's taking H2O, which is water. It's breaking that bond between them. So you wind up with pure hydrogen and pure oxygen, right? Which, and then you can either keep that together as HHO, which is what they call it, or you could just keep the hydrogen, and then what, you burn it or what happens?
You're supposed to turn it back into energy. It's not really burning it. It's
a chemical reaction.
It's just, God, I wish I had kept that explanation. I mean, it's, they put it in very much layman's terms, which made it very easy for me to understand 100%. But basically the ones that we built were nothing more than a big battery. So you had that, you know, your chemical reactions and everything, and it stored it into a battery, you know, and it was three phase, not single phase, you know, not 120. And you could power a complete building, you know, several of them with it, depending on the megawatt output of it. But then again, I don't know if the technology has come any further than that, but at that point it was still a battery. So, you know, you still had to change these out every, I think it was 5 years at that point, you know, okay. just like a lithium ion.
Well, I've always known the hydrogen to be kind of a storage medium. So you have to put energy into it. You convert the water into hydrogen and oxygen, and then it's just contained. You can contain it. You could ship it around, and you could do the same stuff you can do with hydrogen as you can do with like gasoline or diesel. You can make a generator that runs off of it. You can, they actually make little torches that can cut steel with it. It technically it burns, but really what's happening is it's a chemical reaction where the oxygen and the hydrogen go back together. So the energy you put into it to separate it, when they come back together, you get the energy out, and the byproduct is what? It's pure water. So right. There is no carbon dioxide. There's no nothing. So really it's as green as the energy you put into it. From what I understand. So, you know, if I'm burning a diesel generator to separate the hydrogen and the oxygen, and then, yeah, when it's clean, when I use it for whatever purpose later, it seems clean, but to get the energy put in was not clean. And that's kind of the fallacy right now behind electric cars. They think it's clean because it's, you know, electric. But how did you get that electric, you know? But I just really like hydrogen because we already have pretty much the mechanical devices with slight modification can run on it. We already have the infrastructure to distribute it throughout the United States and the world, just like we do gasoline. It's not like a battery. And what I really like is when you're burning your hydrogen or your HHO or whatever your vehicle is designed to run on, as you consume the fuel, the weight goes down, where it's not the same way with an electric battery. Your weight doesn't change.
Right.
So an empty tank, you still weigh as much as you did with that heavy, you know, 2-ton battery or 1-ton battery or whatever. And that's not the same with hydrogen. So.
Yeah. At that point, it's the same as internal combustion running on gas. So you're going to bring that down, you know, I guess that's about it.
Hey, let me jump in real quick. Let's see who we got in the chat. We got Harps was in there. Way Cool Snoopy. Nice to see you, Way Cool Snoopy. Let's see. Narrow Way, Narrow Gate was in there. Who else? Handy. What's up, Handy? He got to come on and hang out with me. Let's see. Karen's in there. Patrick the Plumber's in there. Little John. We've seen Chris Graves, the Mastodon of Research. We've seen, who else do we see? Syrian Girl. And, and Ann. I don't know if I said Ann. I think that's everybody in the chat. Oh, Gardner Goldsmith. What's going on, Gard? Great show last night. Absolutely wonderful show. And that's everybody. So we thank you for joining us. I see Gard left a link. I'll check that out later. Matter of fact, I'm going to open that because the chat scrolls away. So I guess my question now would be, let me go ahead and pause this. The question now would be, so we get this hydrogen. I guess what can we do with it? Like what kind of things, or why? I guess maybe really the question is, why aren't we using it and researching it?
To me, as I look into this, it comes to everything where it's all about the lobbying. You know, so right now, most of the stuff that I find is the demonization of hydrogen, which is promoted mostly by EV companies, wind, you know, and solar, the companies that are already out there. You know, so this first thing is hydrogen the future or a complete mirage? So, you know, the cost of solar and wind power has fallen spectacularly in the last 20 years, which I really don't believe that. I mean, you know, if anything, I think the cost has gone up for, you know, what they're building. I passed, you know, my favorite thing is passing turbine, you know, wind farms. I passed one the other day in Oklahoma that had easily 100 wind turbines. None of them were turning.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a new farm, you really can't start using these right away until they're all up and in place. It doesn't make any sense, you know, and, you know, you drive by thousands of them and you know, maybe 40, 50% of them aren't working anymore. So there's no way that cost has gone down.
Well, and there's a really good point to be made when you talk about wind and solar, okay? Wind and solar can't just be turned on and just let it go max, because the grid has to be balanced. The supply has to match the demand. So even if it's a very windy day in the middle of the day and off peak hours, they can't run them all because it would overload the grid. Hydrogen, because it's a storage medium, that's the problem they have is batteries, right? Batteries, yep. What you call conditioning your power. You don't, the windmill, the solar doesn't directly power the lights in your house. The windmill and the solar keep the battery topped off. And then the battery puts out a nice steady as needed power supply, nice conditioned power that can meet the demands of the grid. But the batteries are the problem. They admit that that's the problem. So that's why they want you to buy an electric car and spend your money and then buy their electricity that they're producing during the day and off peak hours. And then at night, they want to suck it back out of your car. They want you to buy the battery. But hydrogen is a perfect storage medium. They could just let those things go full blast, creating HHO, and they're tanking it. You know, you store it, and then you turn and burn that in the current. You know, if we modified our power plants now to run hydrogen, we have the perfect setup. I don't understand why they don't do that.
But see, you know, that's the same thing. We've talked about this with solar before. It's not so much that it's feeding your house. They're feeding it back into the grid.
Yes.
And so they are, you know, during the daytime when most people aren't home, everybody's at work or school, whatever. So now they're taking your power, feeding it into the grid. Then when it gets dark out, there's no solar power. Now you have to buy it back. You know,
At my father cost.
My father was about to get solar panels on his house and there was no battery.
Right.
So the conditioning has got to be done, you know, via a panel or something, or by putting it into the grid, conditioning it that way and feeding it back to you. He could get a battery for storage, but they basically told him it won't run your furnace or anything.
Right.
You know, so in the wintertime when your power goes down, what the hell sense does that make to have this battery that doesn't do anything and is not getting recharged if it's dark, or, you know, the whole thing makes no sense, but, you know, it's kind of getting off on a different tangent again. But, you know, so in battery powered electric vehicles have moved from fantasy to ubiquitous reality. I mean, they always forget to talk about the issues with EVs. You know, like you said, where does the electricity come from to actually charge that vehicle? It's still coming from a fossil fuel plant, more than likely, or a hydroelectric plant.
If the goal is to cut CO2, what's the CO2 footprint of getting the lithium and the other metals, the cobalt, the nickel, the all that out of the mines. I mean, if they're not using child labor, which are breathing, right? They're, for whatever energy they spend, they're breathing, creating CO2, or they're using diesel powered heavy equipment. I think that there's so much carbon footprint built into a battery that only lasts maybe 7 years and might catch on fire, then you're going to save by using it. And you got to understand, it weighs so much that you're expelling more energy just lugging it around. So, right. And that energy, like you said, comes from somewhere. So that's a big, like I said, people don't understand. Was it David Knight says, there was somebody who asked, what's your favorite form of energy? And they say electricity. Well, electricity, where did it come from? Right.
Exactly. It's all magical. It just appears.
Yeah. Comes from the plug. I mean, right.
The same thing with the lithium, that's mined for the batteries. So, lithium mm-hmm. is everywhere. It's in the air. We just pull it out. We don't have to go digging for it. People don't look at that. And also the other thing, again, with electric vehicles is that battery will die at some point. Getting rid of the old ones, and also the cost of replacing that battery. And I've read things where replacing that battery was more than the original cost of the car.
Right.
At that point, your car is now disposable. Yeah.
You know what blows my mind? Are you talking about disposal of these things? What blows my mind? I got out of the stock market, but I still have a few. I have a few that I hold on to. It's only a couple $1,000s, just in case one of these companies takes off, And one of them that I invested in was a company called LICY. It stands for life cycle. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they've patented away. They got a couple things they got under their belt. One is they developed a modular factory system, like a Lego plug and play, because you can put up a big empty warehouse building in a month, less than a month, probably, if you got the money. And then you can haul these things in via train or line haul them on truck, and you could snap them together and boom, you got your assembly line. And let's say that you get and I love the idea, because if you get a tax break, say you move into New York and New York has crazy taxes on industry there, right? You might get a tax break for 5 or 6 years. And then they say, oh, now we're going to raise it. Guess what? You could pick up, move your entire factory very quickly to another state, and you can keep those jobs in the U.S. So they have a patent on that. That's one reason I invested in them. And the other is that they figured out a way to get like 98% of those metals back out of these lithium ion batteries. They do something where they turn into a sludge and then they separate it. But I thought that was going to be great. I'm thinking, well, the government's going to subsidize this, because this is going to be a problem as they go all electric and these batteries start going bad. But you know what? Nobody's interested, and my stock sucks. It's like down by, I think it's only worth half of what I bought it. And I bought into it cheap. I bought into it early, and it's down by half. So if they really took this problem seriously, but no, they're just going to throw them in a landfill or leave them in a freaking parking lot, like what happened in Australia. They had one outside the car sitting there, and it caught 5 cars on fire. Harp shared that story with us. Mm-hmm. They're not serious about this. If they weren't, it's not about green agenda. It's about who gets the money. And that's why we're not jumping on this hydrogen thing, because the hydrogen thing could be super green if we did it right. It really could. And let me share a screen real quick. I want to explain to people. I'm going to show them some graphics in case they don't know. I think our audience probably already knows about this, but let's see. All right. So if I go over here and I take a look, all right, this is our typical, this is our hydrocarbons. Methane, ethane, propane, butane. And what it is we're after this hydrogen, and they're all latched onto these carbon molecules. So you have a naturally aspirated system, which means it's pulling oxygen from the air through a carburetor or something. The hydrogen and the oxygen react and you get your energy. But what happens is this carbon is left behind. The carbon combines with the oxygen, and the byproduct is either CO2, or which is carbon dioxide, or it's carbon monoxide, which is C1 carbon, 1 oxygen. That's bad, because it sticks to our blood better than oxygen does. That's why you die. So what happens, that's what typically, this is a gasoline. It's a little more complicated, but you can see we still got hydrogen and carbon in there. Mm-hmm. The hydrogen is what is used. And everything we do today that's internal combustion is using hydrogen, but the carbon is the problem. If we look at, okay, I guess we'll just have to talk it. When it comes to using just hydrogen, you don't have that problem. There is no carbon left behind. What's left behind is pure water, H2O. And just to show how effective it is, I am going to share this. Stupid StreamYard. All right, so this here is a video. I'll just let it play. Tell me if you can't hear it.
I'm here at Liquid Piston, and I'm just finishing up the see-through liquid piston engine in slow motion, and they just told me that they had a surprise for everyone on my channel. They just finished building the first hydrogen hybrid-powered go-kart right here. Hydrogen is a very clean fuel. There are multiple methods to produce hydrogen with electricity from solar and water, and the exhaust from an engine burning hydrogen is water, not smoke. But hydrogen is extremely fast burning and very harsh on engines. Piston engines usually have hot spots that...
All right, so that's the only, really the only challenge we have to get over with hydrogen. It's proven technology. I've seen an actual HHO go-kart. I know they said that's the first rotary, but I've seen one back in early to mid-2000s when I first started researching into this. They already had created this professional go-kart league where kids, teenagers, stuff like that race. They actually built one, and they did a special class for those. They were the only people in it at the time. I don't know if it's grown since then. I tried to find that video, but I can't find it. But they actually gave them a class, and they were able to do the lap times and everything, and so they can see where they competed. But if we researched it back then and overcame this fast burning, that's a problem. You can still modify engines. These people came up with a different solution, which is a rotary engine. That's a perfect idea. But we could modify existing internal combustion engines, which run on hydrocarbons, and then modify them to run on just the hydrogen, and the carbon goes away. Isn't that the goal? Is to get rid of the carbon, right?
Yeah.
Why are you not doing this?
You know, they in the 70s, people had worked on hydrogen-powered cars. With, running an actual, the same engine that's in my 70 Cougar, they were doing that with hydrogen. But, oil companies or whoever buy that technology up or, they shut them up one way or another. You always hear the story about the guy that had made the carburetor and the car got 85 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
And then
I heard a personal story. A personal story. My grandfather, he's passed now, but he was my step grandfather, but I always knew him as my grandfather. He lived in a podunk town of maybe 20 houses, and his neighbor, a couple houses down, he had one of those old I forget what body style Chevy pickups, the big square ones from the 80s or whatever, big old 350 in it. And he had replaced the carburetor with something that my grandfather described it as a series of little black boxes that replaced the carburetor and run gasoline. He was able to get around 50 miles to get to the gallon pulling his boat. And all of a sudden that guy, just him and his wife, his truck, his boat, everything just disappeared. So, my theory is I don't think they killed them all and I think they probably just paid him a whole bunch of money to buy it. I mean, they left their house intact with all the furniture, everything. Just the truck and the boat and the two people were gone. So that happens.
Yeah. And it's another one of those things that people think is just a conspiracy theory that, this technology just disappeared. Well, it didn't fall off the face of the earth. Somebody bought it or stole it from somebody else and they don't want it being used at this point. But so bring my screen back up. You know that there's money to be made in this.
Yeah. And that's really, I'll bring your screen up. I'm sorry. I was reading that was what I wanted to ask you, is why do you think we're not doing it? And even a Syrian girl says that should be the focus right now.
You haven't heard about this unless you actually look for this, but the United States and Saudi Arabia have an agreement for hydrogen connections and they're talking about pipelines and everything. So they must know that it's usable, but they're, again, they want to control it. They absolutely, they're just not going to let you have it.
You know, the thing is, here's the thing I think. It's too easy for you or I to create that fuel source. It's too easy. It has to be something, like you said, that they can control. Now, to create it on a massive scale, we still have to have the energy to put into it. That might be a little difficult, but it still is possible that to create your own, you know.
When you read the article, it sounds like they already have, you know, or are close to having the infrastructure to do it. But these are the people that are, you know, as far as I'm concerned, these are the type of people that are controlling the energy, you know, and making these decisions. You know, it's all about making money, and if they have to do it in a criminal way, they don't really care.
So Narrowgate's talking about solar and their experience with it. I agree. What they produced, he had 62 solar panels, produced 13,000 kilowatt hours, and was more than enough to power your home. Removal and replacement is including the services, and for a nominal fee was $700. Yes. So this is how that works. I was actually almost pulled the trigger on it myself. It was going to be free for me in Colorado. It wasn't going to cost me anything. In fact, I was going to get a tax credit at the end of the year. But the way it works is they put the solar up there. The solar feeds the grid. They looked at my annual consumption. So I had to show them my bills for like the past 2 years. And they looked at it and they said, okay, this is how many panels you're going to need to produce what you use on an annual basis. And then they added 15% on top of that. So then they were going to come install them for me. And then basically whatever I paid for energy, that was going to be my bill every single month for the next however many years it takes. I think it was 10 or 15 years to pay them off or something. So I pay them, and then they pay the power company, which in fact they would be getting the money back because we're producing more than we're using. And that's how it pays the solar panels off. And it sounded great. It sounded really great until I realized that the solar panels only have a lifespan of so long. And then it's on me to replace them after that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So by the time, it sounded really, really good because they were showing me these charts and they're like, oh, as energy prices go up, you're going to be flat. You're going to be flat. You'll be paying less than your neighbors, even though you're paying us, you're paying less than your neighbors. And then at some point the bill just goes away and then you'll be getting money back from the power company because you're overproducing. And that sounded great until I found out that the solar panels don't last forever. In fact, they have an exponential curve. So they said it's got a 50-year life. Not in Colorado Springs with the hail. I'm going to tell you that. I'm glad I didn't pull the trigger on it because they would have got demolished. And God knows what my homeowner's insurance would go up to if, you know, living in that area, if I had to use my insurance to replace them. So I don't know. And then come and find out that, if, you know, I sold the house a year later, and am I still stuck with that bill? You know, and then if you look at it from a green perspective, the lifespan of one panel, what carbon footprint, if that's what you're looking at, is carbon footprint or money that goes into it, even if you're looking at financial side, is more than you're going to get out of it, more than the savings you're going to get out of it. The only reason it's even affordable right now is because it's heavily subsidized. Look at Solyndra. Solyndra was heavily subsidized and they still couldn't be profitable.
Yeah, you know, because nobody
filed bankruptcy. You think, I guarantee you all their CEOs walked out with a pocket full of cash.
Well, that's where it becomes a scam, because I can tell you that the one thing that they didn't look at when they gave them the money was how cheap China can make the solar panels for, and it made them uncompetitive. So nobody looked into this at the beginning. Like, it was just, you know, hey, here's some $500 million to create, I think it was 30 jobs or something like that. So either the people working in the, you know, producing these things were making a lot of money an hour, or, you know, the CEOs were taking a big chunk of that away. And they, like you said, when they went under, they walked away with it, which always seems to be the typical thing that happens. Well, but the woman across the street from me, she's got solar panels on her house. I guarantee you 3 years, and she was having them changed. Now, whether or not she switched companies or something, but they came, they switched out all the panels. And, you know, like you said, if she had to pay for that, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I got some clarification on that. These are just questions that I had going into it. And then being military, I knew that I wouldn't be in the house forever. So I was like, eh, if I sell the house, which we did, they ended up PCSing us a year early. But yeah, it looks like Narrow said that they would replace two X year they came out and clean the panel, or two times a year they came out and clean the panels. If a panel breaks, they'll replace it. I know that they would have replaced mine if it quit working in the contract I was looking at with them. But as far as like due to hail damage, that would probably go through my insurance. And then Nero says that if you file a claim by your homeowner's insurance, I just had to show the contract to the adjuster, and the house was sold and the new people took over the program. They continued the program. So that's good to know if you are going to go solar. I'm not against solar. I just question if what goes into making a solar panel and how long they last if you get back out of it. What but goes
you,
into
so, you know, that's another one of those things. That's almost like getting cable or you know, internet or something, because it all depends on the program you buy into. You know, there's different, because I've heard a lot of different companies, you know, they only lease them. And if, you know, you sell your house and that person doesn't pick up the lease, then they come take the panels off and all the associated wiring, and your house is left with holes because they don't cover the holes that they drilled for the, you know, the cables and stuff. So again, so it's all going to depend on who you go through.
Yeah, that's good questions. I know that Nero said that if they replace the panels, they did the roof repair. So, hey, Nero, drop in the chat. Let us know where you're at and if you have the name of that company, because I don't think solar is necessarily a bad thing on a small scale. I don't think it's good on a large scale, but on a small scale, and especially going to be in the house for a long time, if the real cost of it was out there, I don't think anybody would do it. But if the money's been spent already, subsidized, and they're out there, I mean, why not? If you, especially if you get off the grid for a while, a small scale. Let's see.
I know I looked at it one time.
Oh, they do. They take your tax credits. So, yeah. I was almost only did it for the tax credit. You know, wow.
I looked into it a few years back, well, probably about 10 years ago, and the cost was going to be like $30,000. You know, again, it depends on who you talk to, what companies, and all that. Mm-hmm. And I sat there, I'm like, do you know how much electricity I would have to use to pay back that $30,000 that's going to cost me?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If they're only going to last maximum 50 years, and that's, you know, they do the math kind of hinky too. They're talking about, oh, so many hours a day of optimal sunshine. You know, that's how much power you're going to produce. And then you're going to save this much plus get paid back this much by the power company eventually. Half the year it's winter time, you know, and they're going to be, I don't know. To me, it seems like their numbers are all based off of like prime optimal conditions and temperature. They always tell you what the panels produce at the optimal temperature, but too hot, too cold, they don't produce as well. You know,
to produce the material for making the panels, I mean, it's a very energy intensive process. You know, we work with companies that do that, and a lot of them are in China, you know, and here. So, I mean, you're looking at 4,000 degrees. You've got to melt this stuff too.
And that's what I'm saying. How much fossil fuels, if you want to call it that, fossil fuels go into creating it? Is it really green? You know, if you look at it from the green side, I don't think it is. I think that if you broke down every step of the production process, installation, shipping, all that stuff, and then you look at what it produces over its 50 years or 30 years or 20 years or whatever it gets out of it, did you really save the planet a little bit more, or was it worse off for producing that?
Yeah, and all the mining to get the material again, right? You know, like lithium, you still got to dig this stuff up, and you're in the silicon that's in them. You know, there again, it goes to certain countries have deposits of it, other countries don't, you know. So it's very scammy, you know. And so, like I was saying, you know, with the wind turbines, you drive by so many of them and they're not turning. And with the billboards I see up, it's because they don't have the people to maintain them. You know, they're having a hard time, like every other industry, getting, you know, bodies out there. So I pass these solar fields out in Texas, and it's the same thing. Who's going out there? You know, if these panels get damaged, who goes out there and checks this stuff and does it, you know, and replaces them? Because I'm sure that they have the same problem where they can't get people to do it either.
This is Narrow Way, Narrow Gate Ministries house that he, I guess he sold it, right?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah, that's a lot of panels. Nice neighborhood, too. Oh, nice. That's in Texas. So Texas might make sense because it's always sunny in Texas, you know, well, most of the time. Northeast, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing here with the woman across the street with the solar panels. She's got them on the south side of the house, some, but there's a big tree right there. And then she has them on the west side of the house. And by the time the sun gets to the west side, especially this time of year, it's really low in the sky behind the trees behind my house. So yeah. it's you know, maybe three months out of the year that it's optimal.
Yeah.
It seems like that's not a very good payback to me.
All right. Well, hey, let's jump back to the hydrogen. We get off on another topic. I find it fascinating, though, to talk about, you know, is it really green or not? I find that fascinating.
But, you know, so they're doing this, the United States and Saudi Arabia. And if I remember, Saudi Arabia is part of BRICS now, isn't it? Or they're going to be. But they're basically doing this to go against the China's Belt and Road Initiative. You know, so they want to get all of Europe involved in this in the economic corridor, they're calling it, for all these pipelines and everything. But as we're running shorter on time here, I got one thing I want to share.
We can go over a little bit.
Yeah, I know, but you got stuff you got to cover too. So
yeah, I just don't want to run into America Unplugged time. So
yep, I hear that. I'm just trying to find that one clip I had. We were talking about the aircraft.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where'd it go? There we go. Nope, that's not it.
Well, here, if you want, I can let me talk about how we can do it green while you find that. Yep. So one way I see this could be very green. Because like I said, if we're going to go to hydrogen, it's only as green as what you use to get the hydrogen out of the water. You know, if you're burning coal to generate electricity, to perform your electrolysis of water, it's just a storage medium. It's like burning coal to put it into an electric car. But there's some interesting stuff, and it's called tidal generators. And what it does is it uses basically the tide. There's two different types. Some of it is a wave generator, which I prefer the wave generator. The tidal generator, you know, you have massive amounts of water moving in at one point during the day, and then it moves out. And these are the different, if you look, they got these little turbines they put in the water. I don't like this because it could obstruct wildlife. You know, fish can get caught up in these ones with the metal grates aren't so bad, but also the water can kind of go around it and stuff. So I don't think it would be that efficient, but it's free energy.
It's going to take the path of least resistance,
right?
Too,
so. Then there's a couple other type. This is one here on the right. Let's see if I got a bigger picture of that. Here it is. So in this example, they would maybe create a reservoir that's at sea level and then make a tunnel or a pipe or something that the water would continually move into this reservoir as the ocean level was rising for the high tide. And then when it goes down, the water would move the other way. And they can design these fins in kind of a wedge shape to where they spin the same direction no matter which way the water is moving. And that's pretty cool. I actually seen a practical application on YouTube right at the same time I was studying hydrogen in the mid-2000s. A guy did it. He took a PVC pipe. He parked his RV on a pier. He put the PVC pipe down in the water. So, you know, as the tide, as the waves went up and down, and this is the way I prefer, I'll go ahead and pull that one up. It uses wind. So it's a combination of water and wind. So as the waves, and this is not necessarily the tide, and understand the tide, when the tide comes in and it's producing electricity, before it goes back out, you're going to have a period of time when there's nothing happening because the water is equalized out, right? So I don't like that idea, plus what it could do to the wildlife. This here, what it does is the water just goes in this air chamber and it goes up and down, up and down. And that's what the guy did with his PVC pipe that he had put down in the water. And then they put a wind generator up here with those special blades on it that turn And so the air is constantly going up and down, up and down. And now you don't mess with the fish. I mean, the fish get in there, the crabs, whatever. It's not going to chop them up. And I just really like this idea. I've seen better diagrams where it could be done on a large scale. And you're just basically using nature's tidal stuff. And these, even if you don't like the aesthetics of these things, like you don't want to go out to California or Hawaii where there's a lot of tourism and throw these things right there where people can see them. You know, it's just a building. That's all it is. You can make it look nice, or you can use these and build them out as the breaks that they put around harbors.
Yep.
You could put them right there, and that could be your wave break, you know? So I don't know. I really like that. And then you have, you know, you're producing the electricity with the wind turbine on top of the wave generator. You take the electricity, the water is right there. It's already got an electrolyte in it, which you need for electrolysis, right? Because you got the salt in the water. You just perform your stuff right there. You capture the hydrogen. You ship the hydrogen all over the U.S. to be burned in whatever, power plants, vehicles, as you're going to show here in a minute, airplanes now, right? They Airbus, and part of my presentation, Airbus by 2025 wants to have a fleet of hydrogen-powered aircraft. So they're working on this. So let me put your screen back up.
Okay.
All right, what you got?
Yeah, looking at this plane.
You probably didn't hit share sound whenever you shared
your screen. But yeah. I mean, it there's nothing but the airplane. It's just the sound of the plane. There's no talking or anything.
So that's a hydrogen-powered aircraft for those of you.
Hydrogen-powered aircraft. Again, if you look at it, to me, it looks a little awkward, but you know, granted, it's in trial phases. You know, you get the fuselage where the pilot's sitting on one side, the engine in the middle, and I'm assuming the other side is the storage, the hydrogen, you know, the battery for it.
So, did they talk about that, like the range of that? Because what I'm going to talk about is the electrical,
no, they didn't. Machines. They didn't get into the range of it. It's still under development. So,
all right.
But I knew you were
at least they're working that way, because hydrogen is something, like I said, it's really not a power source. It's more of a storage medium, because power goes in, hydrogen is the temporary product, and then the hydrogen later is used for it's like an internal combustion type engine.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's a great solution. And I think it's depending on how you get the power, it's a lot greener. You know, and, you know, just because I don't believe in global warming doesn't mean I don't want things to be greener, less smog, you know.
Well, yeah. And if it, you know, if it makes sense, again, you know, it's the way they're going about it. It's all just being driven by the people that have, you know, Elon Musk and whoever, you know, the lobbyists are what drive what's going on. You know, and they seem to be fighting the hydrogen thing pretty hard from what I've been reading on it.
Yeah. And I think part of that is
because they're onto something. So
it's kind of like diesel, right? Making biodiesels become pretty easy now. Like a lot of people know about it. You notice they're trying to pull diesels off. They want to have a monopoly on where that power comes from. Hydrogen's too easy to make.
Well, that's the other thing, you know, with tractor trailers, you know, they're talking about them wanting to go to EVs, but the weight of the batteries, you know, it weighs as much as the cargo it could carry. So now you got to double the weight.
Right.
So Toyota has come out with a hydrogen powered truck, which, you know, you don't hear a lot about. You actually have to look for it because, again, it's something they don't want people to know about.
All right. We got anything more on the hydrogen? You want to switch gears into the flying machines?
Let's switch gears to flying.
All right, well, let's go ahead and let's take off here. All right, that's Little Jetson's intro. And I've always been fascinated with these EVTOLs, EVTOLs or whatever they're called. I've actually, like I said, I bought some stock in a couple companies. And I want to kind of talk about what they are, I guess, at first. Let's see. Let me see. What are EVTOLs? Here we go. Let me pull up on screen. And these are, this is a hot thing right now. I don't know why this does this, StreamYard. Okay. So they're basically electronic vertical. They're a drone, if you can imagine that, right? Yep. So they're like a drone that a person can ride in. All right. And they, most of them have multiple rotors for safety in case one of them goes out, you know. But I don't think this is a real one here on screen. I think this is like a generated image. But basically, they're taken into the helicopter industry. And I like this because I would tell the soldiers, you know, when they would get into a supply or, I don't know, get into some job that wasn't as satisfying, or maybe they didn't see. Actually, supply has a good future when you get out. But there's some jobs that just don't have a very good future when you get out. Like those skills don't translate well into the civilian market. So I would tell them the two things you want to look into if you want to switch your jobs in the Army is cybersecurity and drone piloting. And I mean, and like exactly like I said, they've already started using drones to replace helicopters on a small scale. Savannah, Georgia had a local news crew that used to boast about their action drone cam. You know, they're cheaper to operate. You can have multiple for like the same cost. So if one battery goes down, you fly another one. You one or two people to operate it, maybe one person operating camera, one person flying it. Actually, you could just tell it where to go GPS wise. So one person can operate it. Way cheaper. You can keep them in the air for quite a while with the new ones. And I just said that's going to be the future for search and rescue. It makes more sense. You don't risk a person. You put the drones out there first. You can have a fleet of drones searching a whole area. Let's say someone fell in the ocean, and I've seen this. The Coast Guard has to fly around. Just fly the drones out there, spread them out. You know, you can fly them as a swarm even when they get this swarm technology down. It just makes a lot more sense that you're not risking lives. And you know, if you lose a drone, $2,000? You know, if you lose a helicopter. So I told them that's what you need to go into. And when I started seeing this kind of a drone you can ride in, I started following it real close. And that's why I invested in a couple of companies. But I'll give you a kind of a look at what they actually look like. One company, Joby, right here.
Aircraft off our pilot manufacturing line.
This is one that they actually make.
And specifically, really excited to announce today.
But note, look how big it is. So I don't foresee us, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. I don't foresee this being something that we own for commuter traffic, even though it's pretty cool. I don't think that's the plan. We'll talk about that in a minute.
That we have received from the FAA our special certificate of airworthiness for that aircraft.
All right, so that's the Joby. That's one of the top ones right now for the smaller guys. Archer was number two. This was the one I was interested in right away, but then I found out about these other companies.
Archer Aviation and Stellantis
that looks
announced
cool, don't
progress
it?
In their strategic manufacturing partnership at the 2023 Paris Air Show. With construction now well underway on the world's
But these things actually fly, and they can carry, I think, the best one I've seen that they have actually proven works can carry up to 500 pounds. I forget the range on it, but it was pretty impressive, like around 100 miles or something. No, I think it's 80 miles, but they can carry up to 500 pounds. They can have a pilot or not. They can automate. I don't like the automated flying, but if you could take the pilot out of the seat, you can get another passenger in there, right? And anyway, this is the one from who is this? Vertical Aerospace, which is VTOL. That's another company if you're interested. VTOL. And then this Lilium. These guys aren't doing so good. But this is obviously the direction they're going. They're, you know, as we get away from the automobile, and that's where this comes down to, like, what the intent of what they're doing is. Let's see what else.
I just, you know, I know I've read things where this is what they want to start doing is putting people in flying machines, so to speak. You imagine by taking the traffic we have now and moving it upwards, basically?
And that's what I wanted to talk about. This is going to look really, really cool. People are going to say, oh, it's the future of travel, especially in congested cities, you know, as roads are going away and they're making room for bike paths and things like that, and they're demolishing highways. Everyone thinks going to move to this. Well, I just want you to look at this. This is what you have to do to fly a drone. federal drone laws in the United States. You know, of course, because they got to regulate everything, right? They have to regulate everything. Drones were fun. They're like, let's take the fun out of it. So here's some of the rules. And there's different classes. There's over so many, you know, over such a size of a drone, under such a size, what height you're going to fly it. But you got to stay below 400 feet at all times. Get authorization before flying in controlled airspaces. That means you need to know where the controlled airspaces are, right? You can't just take this thing to the park and launch it to get some aerial photography, right? You can't do it. If you make money on it, you have to register. Now, granted, right now, to register is pretty easy for like hobbyists. It's like a free, like 15-minute test online, and then it's like $5 for 3 years to register it, which I don't think you're set to register it at all. You got to stay in line of sight. Your drone has to weigh under 55 pounds. This is for the hobbyist. So you can imagine as we move up into these personal riding people in it, and I can go on and on with the rules. As we move into that, it's going to be something that they're not going to allow us to do, is what I'm getting at. They're going to say, no, you have to ride in this Uber style taxi. That's how you're going to use it. And it's perfect for their 15-minute cities. You see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, right. They were going to restrict the amount of travel you can do anyway, so.
Yeah, and what really intrigued me was you had a couple of people, talking about this, and then all of a sudden, overnight, all these companies are pushing for the same exact thing, and they're all competing with each other. Why would you do that if you have people already spearheading this initiative and they're going to go through all the research and development and iron out all the kinks and then wait for the rules to be developed and all this other stuff? Why would you invest all that money to compete in that industry and not wait for somebody else to go through the hard stuff? And then you just come in with a bag full of cash. You know, like here's some of the companies besides those four, some of the larger companies that are in on this. Tesla, funny story behind that. The one he's developing was, he stole it. This college kid came up with the idea. He designed it. He took SolidWorks, which is a CAD program, 3D designed the entire thing, submitted it as either a job or an intern application to Tesla. They said no. So the guy didn't get a job at Tesla, but they took his design. That's who Elon Musk is right there. That's who he is.
And that's the whole thing. You know, you talk about why would you put this money in? There was a lot of people that got into the EV market. Lordtown Motors, they bought up an old GM plant in Ohio, huge GM plant. And this guy was going to produce pickup trucks. So, you know, either one way it's a scam or whatever, but he get, you know, the people to invest in it. The guy never made anything. It's closed now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lot of what this is. You get that capital in, again, like a Solyndra thing, but that was government, you know, funded. You know, so, you know, people start talking about it. And, you know, like you said, these companies start appearing out of nowhere. Well, we're going to do this, you know, if we can get the capital. And, you know, it's just more scamming as far as I'm concerned. There's no way they're going to allow people to have, I mean, you know, people commute by Cessnas. They own their own, you know, small planes. You got to file a flight plan. You got to be a licensed pilot and all that. It's not like you can just go out and jump into this thing. You can't fill the skies with all these drones, you know, carrying passengers around. It's just a recipe for catastrophe at that point.
Well, I mean, there's other things to consider as well. People are going to be flying around hitting power lines because, you know, what if you crash in some weird spot, like someone's backyard? Line of sight communication devices, like the towers with the parabolic dishes, they have to stay unobstructed. You know, a bird or something like that isn't going to drop your communication, but something that size will. I mean, there's a lot of inherent problems. They're not going to let us fly it. They're not. I mean, do you have anywhere to park it? The thing is bigger than your driveway. Right. Maybe. So I see this as a vessel, and they even mention it. Where was it? Let's see if I can find it here. Personal use. Here it is. This is what is a one of these EVTOLs? See. You need to solve the equation. This talks about personal use. You need to solve the equation of where do you land? How do you control it? Noise regulation. Like I said, all those problems, power lines, you know, running in between communication stuff. So he says, I don't think a commercial approach is the first step, yet that they're kind of pushing as a commercial thing. Like, who's going to spend that much money anyway? I'm sorry, a personal. They make it seem like a personal thing, but if you go strictly commercial, you're not going to sell enough of these things to get your money back with all the money you put into it. Okay, it's going to be really difficult, especially in a crowded market with, you know, one person contracts with you and then the other person that was a potential customer contracts with someone else. That's why I think it's all kind of a government ran push. They talk about it's most likely only the wealthy people with a lot of land. There will be some people that have them privately, and they'll have to be, like we were talking about, the, you know, having a license and stuff. They can get around that if it's self-driving, which they have these. They have them already that are self-driving, and you can fly cargo or anything with it. So
that was going to be my next question. So is it actually a drone, or is it, you know, a electric airplane? Because, you know,
it's both.
Right. So now if it's an electric airplane, then you're getting back into FAA stuff. You know, you have to have a license and all that. Now, if it's a drone, they can say, okay, so you have a 1,000-acre ranch or whatever. And like you said, I want to take this hay out to, you know, the back 40. You can load it up in the drone, you know, and I don't know if you're going to use a joystick or whatever to get it there, or punch in coordinates, whatever, but there's no pilot or anything. You're just, you know, it's no different than a hobby drone at that point.
Well, that was one of the potential personal uses that they cited as being handy, is for large ranchers, if anything, just to check your ranch out, you know, where your cattle are. You know, I don't know about moving, you know, stuff, because it's heavy, but I mean, one of them carry up to 500 pounds. Right. I got some videos here that kind of talk about, so, you know, kind of talked about like what these things are and what looks cool about them, how I don't think that we're going to be able to have them personally. But let's see what Airbus, because Airbus is developing their own, and we could talk about this. I got a few video clips from a presentation. And then we'll try to get up out of here. We're already into the past the hour.
It is a keystone in the European Aerospace Group's green aviation agenda.
It really sits at the heart of decarbonization of our industry. This is the fundamental reason. Of course, in the end, we have to make it sustainable. And sustainable means also sustainable from an environmental perspective and sustainable from a business perspective. But at the heart really is the decarbonization.
All right, so she said it right there. It's kind of tipping their hat or tipping their hand, saying that really it's all about the green agenda. So that's going back to why I say, why so many startups at one time and one small span of a couple of years. I think that it's a government push. I think it has to do with 15-minute cities. And this is the way you will travel unless you take mass transit. Mass transit will be the preferred way. And the wealthy people, you know, for the plebs down there, they take the train or the bus or they walk. But for us people that live on the penthouses, you know, living off the backs of everybody else that actually eat real meat, we're going to fly from penthouse to penthouse. This is going to be our preferred method of transportation. That's where I see it going. And I think there's so many startups, because you're going to do like they did with social media companies and things like that. The government's going to let them fight over it for a while. And eventually they're going to start asking who's going to play ball. And whoever plays ball is going to be the winner, you know. Think of Facebook, think of Twitter, think of, these are the people that are going to work with the government. So I don't know what you think about that.
She, you know, she's a typical salesperson, you know, for the green agenda. She hit on all the right words, you know, sustainable, you know, carbon, which was the other one she had, was carbon free or whatever, but you know,
it's not carbon free,
but I, you know, but this, so this is all the words that they like to use to get people, you know, she's a typical a salesman, because she's not truthful about everything. You just hit those points and people listen. Where for me, because I am in sales, I talk to people just like I talk to everybody, you know, and I'll tell you the truth. You know, I'm not going to tell you that buying this furnace is the greenest thing you've ever done in your life, you know, which people in my industry wouldn't care, because they know it's not, they, you know, they're like all of us. We know it's a lie. You know, maybe you could do it, but it's not going to be as efficient as everything we're using right now. You know, but she hit on all those words. I'm just watching it, you know, and that's how they get people to buy into all this. It has nothing. Yeah. They don't prove it. They just get that money by telling you what, this is what we're going to do. would you like to have, help us along, fund us for this?
And I think they
don't care.
And I think we can look for some of these companies. Now, there's a couple good things. I do want to highlight the good things about some of these companies. One of them, I don't remember which one it was. It might've been Archer. It might've been Joby, but they're actually building the facilities in Georgia. So they will be creating American jobs. That's a good thing. So, and like I said, I don't necessarily think that if they just want to use them for, I'll get into the purpose here in the next video, tells what they're talking about using for. I don't see that as a bad thing. I'm kind of weary. Okay. That this is government, world government saying, hey, they put a bug in all these folks here and says, we want you to develop this now go. And so they all start developing at the same time. And then they're going to pick the winner and the winner's going to play ball. So then what will it be used for? I would say just speculation. This is a 15-minute city move for, or like the line, right? The line, you got the people who walk the line and then you get the rich ones. They get to fly back and forth. I don't know. That's kind of, maybe I'm being cynical, but.
No, I think that's the thing. I'm being cynical too, because that's what we got to start doing to protect ourselves from these people, The guy behind the curtain, like you're saying, that's pulling the strings on this and feeding it out through all these. I don't want to use that term, but these salesmen that are promoting all this, they're shills or whatever you want to call them. But that's the whole thing. I find myself getting more cynical.
And then I also look for this. If this reeks of the same stuff they do with green energy, and it has a green energy motivation behind it. I'm looking for heavy government subsidization, which is my money. And this is a global push. Do you think all the countries in the Western nations are going to share in that cost, or is that going to be the United States subsidizing this crap?
Well, we have a tendency to do that. We have a tendency to be the one that says, oh, hey, we'll take care of that. And then we lose out on it,
So, hey, I do want to holler at Tom. Tom jumped in the chat, so I wanted to say hi. I didn't want to miss him. And then
Lord Raoul is in there.
Yeah, Raoul's in there. I seen that earlier. And I don't think I missed anyone else. I think I already said hi to Little John. But anyway, let's go ahead and let her talk.
Is in there, no relation.
Yeah, no relation. Let me go ahead and put up what they say the purpose of this is, and I trust that this is maybe their purpose, but I think that there's because of the way it's pushed out, so many people at one time, such a crowded space out of nowhere. That's not going to be profitable potentially ever. Here's what they say it's for.
Performance targets that we have set for our first generation of eVTOL aircraft, which we call City Airbus, is something that we consider a starting point. So an operational range of 80 kilometers, a cruise speed of 120.
So 80 kilometers. And notice they always use kilometers because it seems further. Americans think 80 miles, right? So you're talking about 45 miles.
Yeah.
So this is not something that at this point is even practical for somebody who has a, if they let it, you park it on the building or they had a parking spot for you, you can't use this at this point in time, even if they did let you fly it. It would be, like you said, maybe for ranchers and stuff. That's only personal use.
And you know what happens with this? It's like the Tesla. It becomes a status symbol. So you're saying, right. The rich are going to own them, and oh, look what I got! I can go from my house to my garage in this thing.
Yeah,
who cares?
All right, let's keep going.
And a passenger capability of 4 people. So when we're thinking about general passenger,
that's another thing to think about too. The passenger capability of this, and you're going to see some more of this later. They talk about how much greener this is than our current transportation. Because they're also talking about doing long range, after they build it up, long range electric, airplanes and stuff like that. They only sit about 6 to 12 people on some of the concepts they have now. So how many of those flights have to be charged up with their batteries to equal one, Boeing aircraft? So is it really greener? Maybe that one flight is greener, but you've only moved so many people to their destination. I don't think it's going to be greener. It's kind of like if you think of it this way, if I have a school bus that carries, 60 kids, that's more efficient than 60 parents in an electric vehicle, taking their kids individually to school and then coming back and recharging their car. You know, just observation there. That's how you know it's not going to be for the masses, because it's geared for a handful of people.
Passenger transport, and this means for us scheduled services. So a typical would be airport to city center, downtown scheduled service. This is really integrated into the mobility services of a given city, of a given community. And here it's about giving choice. We will not imagine that such a vehicle will ever replace mass transport. This is just simply unrealistic. But if it is complementary, if it is given another option, which is again sustainable, fully electric, zero emission, then the average person making their transport choices of the day can choose an eVTOL, can choose a mass transport, can choose other means of transport. So the
All right, a couple things I wanted to pull apart in that. Number one, she's already said it's going to be a subscription-based travel service, right?
Just like a
subscription-based or pay for the ride. So this is obviously it's going to be, it's not going to be something you're going to own. The other thing is they use it, the term choice. I love it when they tell us what we're going to do, because I mean, we're talking, this is 15-minute city thinking here, right? Oh, well, you don't have to take the train. You don't have to walk. You have this choice. But we took away your choice to own a vehicle, but now you have a choice to pay into this subscription-based service or their pay per ride. Like it's like an expensive Uber. It just reeks of 15-minute city. I'm sorry. What do you think?
It's 100%. I get sick listening to people talk like this, you know, and just she's 100% polished. She probably practiced that speech for. She might be an android. She might be AI.
Narrow says she drank the climate change Kool-Aid. She had a whole gallon of it. All right, last one, and then we'll get up out of here. We're already running long, and I know people want to get their breakfast in before America Unplugged. I don't like to run right up to the moment, you know. So this is where I do see this being functional, and they are focused in this. And I've, like I said before, you have wildfires. And you got to send people up there to see. Well, let me play it first, and we'll talk about the possible other applications for this technology.
The purpose for eVTOL aircraft that could have a positive impact on society is to deploy them in emergency medical services to get urgent care to patients in life-threatening situations. Airbus, which already supplies conventional helicopters for this function, has launched a partnership with Norwegian air ambulance operators to work out how eVTOL vehicles can make even more of an impact.
All right. When I first was reading about these things, when they got practical and they can carry some weight and had a little range, that's what came to my mind was emergency rescue operations, even if it's just searching for somebody that's lost in a canyon somewhere. Why risk a pilot? Why waste the fuel, the time? And it takes a while to spin up a chopper, right? Somebody got in a bad car accident on the highway and you need someone there to give like immediate care while the ambulance is on its way. You can just have these things ready to go, fully charged. You throw one or two EMS in there with their kit and you get them line of sight, fly straight there and get them doing those life-saving measures. You know, firefighters, they right now, I forget what they call them. Those guys that jump into the fire.
Mm-hmm. Fire.
They have to parachute in, which is really dangerous because you get the warm air and the updrafts. You could wind up going anywhere in those this would be a way to that the firefighters can get there, but you're not risking the pilots. And there's a lot of applications for it. What do you think would be some good stuff we could see from this technology?
I mean, you know, as far as going out and using it to, you know, look for wildfires and whatever, I mean, most of this stuff can be done with the regular drones that they're using now, which definitely get a longer range out of them than this thing. You know, as far as using it to drop EMSs, I'd rather have LifeStar helicopter come get me than some drone, because they can load you into a LifeStar and get you in and out, and there's a pilot. Mm-hmm. The drone shows up, so if they're just dropping a couple of EMSs, I'm still, you know, and for that drone to carry all the equipment that they could potentially use, I guarantee it's going to be over the 500-pound capacity. Now, I realize that's what it is now. So then what does the range become as they start to load this thing up? You know, can they get in there and they get there and go, oh, holy crap, this guy, you know, we need to put his head back on before he bleeds to death. We better get LifeStar in here. So now I just kind of wasted all that time. You know, I think they try to promote stuff more and more. And you, then when it gets down the line, you find out, or they determine that, you know, it wasn't really great for what we were doing. The old way was better, but we can't go back that way now.
Yeah, that's definitely a worry.
I mean, same with, you know, electric cars. They know a combustion engine car is way better. But they've already sold you on that, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to say, because now all the auto manufacturers are turning to EVs. And, you know, I know plants that are closing down, engine plants for Honda and stuff, because they're turning towards EVs. Well, now you're just taking that technology away. They're not going to go back and say, okay, we need to fire the engine plant back up.
Because, well, it's especially if they're getting subsidized by the government, like Aaron brought up with Ford. Was it you, or I think it was Aaron's story, where they were losing tons and tons of money per EV.
That's well known.
Yeah, and the EVs themselves are ridiculously expensive, so you're already looking at a very reduced rate for what they should cost, but the government picks up that bill.
But see, so they're not going to stop. That should tell you when any technology is a loser is when it's got to be subsidized.
Yeah.
The government shouldn't have anything to do with any of this stuff. And so then that's also got to say, who's tied to all this? Who's making money on this? It's the people in government. If now they're taking our money, as you said, our tax money, and subsidizing a company like Solyndra or something like that to spend that money so that they can make money on stocks, or whatever, and then they all parachute out just before it goes under, you know, and leave there. And that's been proven too that they've done this.
Well, and that's what will happen. So you'll have, in my opinion, you've got these four or five major competitors that have something they've actually developed and can fly, and it has practical applications. Even at this stage, it has some practical applications. Those folks will fight, and whoever is better for the government to work, you know, will work with, they will win the fight. They will get the subsidies, and everybody else will do a pump and dump and fly out, like you said. And you know, one thing I wanted to bring up too, it's another negative. What just happened with this F-35, right? Yeah. So this thing has a potential of being problematic. Harps had mentioned in the chat, you know, nothing's going to come from this that's good. And he's talking about what they're doing with drones over in, where was it, in Ukraine, or what they do with drones anywhere. I mean, our adversaries, you know, the terrorists over in Afghanistan were using drones and dropping bombs on people. And they were filming it for their propaganda reels, right? So they got a drone that drops a bomb. They got another drone that films it. And, what if they hack into one of these things, even if it is, you know, a commercially owned one? It's EMS service, it's firefighters, it's whatever. And by the way, Nero reminded me, it's hot shots. That's what they call those guys that jump in. Hot shots. Thank you for that. But what if they get hacked and then they can fly it into a military base, you know, and crash it into an EV charging station? I don't know. So it catches fire.
Well, there's another thing. So when this thing falls out of the sky, I got to imagine that it's got lithium batteries in it.
Yeah.
So when
you can imagine the current draw with, you know, you got five of these high speed motors. The current draw has to be crazy. I know the Tesla one, I should have brought the Tesla one up. The Tesla one is based off of Manta Ray, its design, like that you see in the water. Really super cool. The kid who designed that should be like a CEO at Tesla. But no, I don't know if he works there now or not, but he got the shaft right away and they took the design and ran with it.
But see, there's another thing. You get on a regular plane and you check your bags, and one of the first questions they ask you, do you have any lithium batteries in your luggage? But now they want to put it on a plane and fly it over your head. And like you said, the current and all that, those things heat up, catch fire. So now you get, you know, we are our own worst enemies.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. I don't know. I don't think I forgot anything. It was a good conversation. I wouldn't mind having one of these things. Oh, they do have thing. I'll let everyone look it up on their own, but look up the Jetson. What's it called? It's the George Jetson quadcopter or whatever. It's like the size of a motorcycle. It costs $95,000, but you can buy it. You just can't fly it very high. because you get to fall within the drone rules. But it only holds, it's kind of funny because they were saying that they don't expect Americans to be able to buy it because its weight limit is like 210 pounds for the passenger. They said they didn't expect to see a market in the U.S. So I would agree with that.
I just get a jet pack. That's what I want.
Yeah, there's another guy invented one of them too. But that thing, I would totally rock that thing. And it has parachutes that automatically deploy if it fails. So that I would feel safe in that. But the thing's cool. It's like watching the speeder on Star Wars, you know, and you don't need any roads.
Hey Doc, you better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah, I got that clip for Chris. I'm glad he's in here today. He always mentions that, so I got that one. Anyway, I guess that's all I got. You got any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, sir. Just I'm keeping my feet on the ground and driving my gas guzzler. So,
yeah, there you right go. Now. All right. Well, hey, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Really good. I wish I could have got to the chat more. A lot of comments in the chat is moving by really fast. So appreciate y'all spending your time. And we will see you all in America Unplugged chat. All right.
Good day, everybody.
All right. Till next time. Take care.